Hey there, podcast listener. Steven here from the podcast you're currently listening to. You ever heard a podcast and think, I can do that? Well, maybe you can, or maybe you can't. Or maybe I can help you get started with it. Hosting is the most expensive cost you'll have in a podcast, and that's why Anchor by Spotify is the easiest way to make a podcast. Really, they have everything you need all in one place. Anchor has tools that allow you to record and edit your podcast right from your phone or computer. With Anchor's hosting, you can distribute your podcast to other listening platforms like Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and a whole lot more. And if you think you can do a better job than I, record a podcast right now. There's very low risk involved. It's everything you need to make a podcast in one place. And best of all, Anchor is free. Download the Anchor app or go to anchor.fm to get started today.
Archer of the battlecruiser Enterprise.
This is Christopher Pike of the USS Enterprise.
It's Captain James Kirk of the USS Enterprise.
This is Jean-Luc Picard, Captain of the Enterprise.
This is Captain Sisko of the USS Defiant.
Welcome, everybody, to The Away Team, a series that recaps each episode of Star Trek in canonical order with a bit of a twist. I'm Stephen Vargas.
I'm Adam Riley.
I'm depressed, man. No new Star Trek this week.
When's the next show coming?
I don't know. Didn't they say something about like Lower Decks coming back in like July, but they never mentioned anything. Like usually, like that was the thing is like for the last three series we had, Discovery, Picard, and Lower Decks, we always had like the first episode of the new series, and it's like now we have like nothing. It's like what the fuck?
Well, it's funny because they're like, oh, you know, the scheduling's off. They go, oh, it must just be leftovers from COVID. Like, nah, we can't stretch that out anymore. Like, it's been a minute.
You know? Right.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah. I have no idea when the next Star Trek show. I guess I could Google it, but, you know, when's the next? It's like I'm on Ask Jeeves. When's the next Star Trek show? Remember, you could ask it a question.
I remember, bro. Damn.
Star Trek release dates. This was updated 3 days ago, and it is topical as well. Although it's telling this is strange to worlds. I already know that season 3 of Lower Decks has been moved to summer 2022, which means no one knows. It says New World starts wrapping up in July. Season 3 sees our heroic ensigns and the remaining bridge off. Blah, 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 blah. So it seems to be coming soon, but nobody knows. Prodigy is later this year, but I think there's Prodigy episodes I haven't seen. I don't know because their shit was all confusing. Discovery is sometime next year. Picard is sometime next year. Section 31 is still in development. Oh, Starfleet Academy. I forgot about this one.
Oh yeah, I forgot about that show.
There's no date on that. I think it's supposed to follow Tilly being an instructor. I kind of liked her as a teacher. I thought that was an interesting character. I would enjoy that.
It's an interesting development considering her character in the beginning, you know, like.
See, I'm a real fan. I enjoy anything that's Star Trek. Even if I don't enjoy it, I enjoy it. Even if there's flaws in it, I'm like, I'll still watch it again. It's fine, you know. I think I'm going to take a break since we're waiting, and I'm going to start watching the old animated series. Because I've never seen it, so I thought it would be fun to throw that on there.
Yeah. It'll be a while before we hit that.
Yeah, so I'll just watch it. Fuck it. Do what I want. You know what I mean?
Well, speaking of doing what we want, weird segue, but this the season finale of Strange New Worlds, A Quality of Mercy.
Yeah.
Thoughts? The Jews, your thoughts.
Old joke, by the way. I liked it. I mean, obviously, I thought it was a really cool. It was just really cool what they did, where it was. And Steve graciously told me to watch Balance of Terror first, which really amped up the enjoyment of this episode.
Right.
I hadn't seen Balance of Terror since I was in high school, and I watched Balance of Terror. Then I almost immediately watched Strange New World. There was like an hour break in there where I was doing something. And it's so crazy how close it was. Like, and even the camera angles were
the music,
the sound effects. They didn't go full TOS, but right. just enough for you to go, wow. You know, like it was kind of cool. I really enjoyed I think having Kirk in there was a smart move. I do see a lot of people go, oh, they were just trying to get Kirk. Nah, that makes sense. Because he was on the ship that he was supposed to be on if he never came on the Enterprise,
right.
which is the Farragut, which if you didn't know that, you have no right to say anything about this episode.
Or to say anything about Trek at all. Like, Trek is garbage. If you haven't seen it, fuck you. Fuck you.
Fuck you.
Also, if you know even the base, even if you've watched Doctor Who, you know there are certain things in time that are fixed points. So even if Kirk wasn't in command of the Enterprise, time would find a way to bring Kirk there.
Yeah, because that moment is incredibly important. And this Strange New Worlds episode really drives that home
right.
for anyone who isn't a super fan who understands like the political structure of Star Trek, which I understand we get in the weeds sometimes. But the way it played out, the thing I loved about it was the way it played out was logical.
Yeah.
Right. The Romulans at that time were looking for a fight. They wanted to start a war because that's how the Romulans are, because they're Romans in space. They just want to fight something. But the way Kirk handled it, by being more of an aggressive stance in the original episode, he was able to resolve that issue quicker.
Right.
And it didn't get to where it got to here, because with Pike being so optimistic and giving people a chance to be good, which did happen, Pike was correct. The problem was is that someone on the ship went behind the commander's back of the Romulan ship, right? And now we got the whole fleet and they're ready to go.
Yeah.
You know, and it's and the Enterprise being the Enterprise, we're on the fucking – no one's ever at the neutral zone, by the way. It's always just the Enterprise. I've noticed that. It was yeah. like that TNG.
Team. Yeah. They were the only ones at the neutral zone, yeah.
The Farragut was hanging out.
Yeah.
You know, which is it convenient? Sure. But like you said, Kirk had to be there.
Yeah.
It's Balance of Terror. I don't give a fuck what changed, you know. But my final words on it, man, it was one of those episodes that is so just tactfully and strategically done that you really got to tip your hat to the writers. It was so clever. I want to watch it again. I'm definitely going to watch it again soon, because it was also too. I want to give a shout out real quick. Balance of Terror is a fire episode.
Oh, fuck yeah, dude.
And if you haven't seen that shit, the way Kirk handled that, and the best thing about Balance of Terror too, is I don't know how people can say Kirk is just some fucking meathead when they've seen Balance of Terror.
Right.
Like, yes, does he take a more aggressive stance than most other cat? Well, usually when people are talking shit, they're in a 90s Trek and they're thinking about Picard.
Right.
Picard probably would have made the same mistake Pike made. Keep it 100. And Picard's my favorite captain, but he would have made the same mistake.
Yeah.
Because he's a little bit more always for peace. Kirk was wise enough to know that's not how they operate.
But also too, like, he even stated that, like, you know, he goes, if we go into the neutral zone, we're considered expendable. And then he right. goes that I, you know, that I'm willing to take that chance, because he knew, like, he it's like the Kirk in the episode said that, you know, we can't let them get away with this.
Exactly. You
know? But he also didn't put the crew at too much of a risk when they backed off. And then they played that whole submarine thing, where they were both just laying there quiet, and they were just,
I loved it.
You know, and everybody's whispering to one another. You know, it's like, you know.
Well, and then also too, it with Kirk in that episode, not only was he calm and calculated, and he was ready to take care of this issue, he also calmed down the dude in front of him
Oh yeah.
Who was acting? Let's keep it real. Racist. And one of the best lines was, "That was their war. Don't forget that."
Right.
And I'm like, damn, that was really fucking good. And then also we think about the time the show came out. Very topical. You know, it was very, very on point for that generation that was watching it. You know.
And then what did he say to Styles? He goes, "There's no room for bigotry on the bridge.
There's no room for bigotry on the bridge. Keep that in your quarters or something like that." And then that similar thing happened in Strange New Worlds. It happened with Ortega.
Right.
Which, that kind of part, I liked that it happened. It didn't need to happen, where she was getting amped up. They're just trying to call back to the old show. I got it. Like, I understand why it was there, but it didn't make as much sense. Because Styles was like my father's father was in that war, and he fucking, you can't trust these cats, you know,
Like Ortega, she said this on Twitter because she was hearing people make that thing. She goes, "Remember, it's also been 7 years. We don't know what's happened.
That's true.
That we don't know what has happened between them.
True.
You know, because now she wasn't an aspiring cadet. She's a full lieutenant. I liked also the subtle change that they gave between the navigator and the Khan when they switched it. So the Asian chick was now in Sulu's spot and Ortega's was Styles' spot.
I noticed that. I thought that was cool.
I thought that was a cool little nod there. Hearing a little Scotty. On the
hearing Scotty trip me out, I was like, and not showing him what was, I thought, smart.
Yeah,
you know, because it left it open. Maybe he'll come into the show, maybe he won't, you know. Right. We don't know. But the guy who played Kirk, I thought he did a great job. And I liked him too, because he wasn't pretending to be William Shatner. It's almost like you gave there's two actors, right? There's this one, I don't know his name, and then there's William Shatner, and you gave both of them a character.
Yeah.
And this was their interpretation of said character. Yeah. And you have to tip your hat to him for that, because when you're playing such an iconic character, it has to be difficult not to almost accidentally copy the person who went before. I know there's some people who the guy who played Spock in the Kelvin Universe movies, he said that was a struggle, that he had to really make sure he wasn't being Leonard Nimoy,
right?
That he was being Spock.
It's the same thing with Chris Pine, who said that. He goes, everybody's like, "Oh, you know," he goes, "Well, I wasn't Shatner playing Kirk." He goes, right. "I'm playing Kirk," you know. So
and I think Chris Pine did a great job. He definitely had that same kind of attitude, and I think this new guy did a good job too. And there was a couple times where he was pausing for effect, you know, but. The pausing for effect, you could even argue, is just part of that kind of personality.
Yeah.
Grandiose, you know, and stuff like that. I thought he did an excellent job. I'd love to see him back. Not all the time. You don't want to overuse him.
Right. Well, he's supposed to appear in season two, so.
Right. So,
I'm assuming at that point he's going to be Lieutenant Kirk.
Lieutenant Kirk on the Farragut.
Yeah. So.
What was it? What was his station? Do we know that?
I don't remember.
He wasn't. He wasn't. Science, or he was always in
I don't know if
the command one.
Yeah, he was always in command, so I don't know exactly where, but I thought it was always interesting with, and that was one thing that I realized, because Pluto TV is showing like Star Trek, JJ Abrams, and then Into Darkness, I think, or no, was it Star Trek Beyond? I can't remember, one of those two. But I was watching the 2009 one over the weekend.
Yeah.
And I noticed something that they did and it didn't dawn on me until after watching these two episodes, was they didn't react when Nero showed up as a Romulan. Because at this point in the Kelvin universe, they wouldn't have still supposedly known what Romulans look like.
Right. It was actually pretty clever. I remember discussing that on Reddit with random people, actually, because they accelerated Kirk getting onto the Enterprise in the Kelvin universe.
Right.
But it made sense because of his father. So his father caused Pike to take an interest in him. You know what I mean? So it's really cool. And the Pike universe, or the Pike universe, the Kelvin universe, we're all in Pike's universe. Okay? Right. the Kelvin universe was done, story-wise, was done so well that it confuses me, and I don't remember if what I know is from Kelvin or if it was from the main line.
I did like the Kelvin name drop in the episode when he goes, "Tell me about yourself,"
He goes, well, my father was first officer on the Kelvin. Yeah. I was like, oh, a nice name drop there. I really liked it. It was funny because when I watched it and I was like going, wait, this is Balance of Terror, isn't it? I'm like, oh shit, this is Balance of Terror. And it's like, as more I saw, I'm like, oh shit. Like, you know, and then I did the lighting of the eyes, you know, where it was just like those singular shots of them with dark, but then the eyes.
I could tell that Steve was really excited about this episode to the point that I was like, I better watch this or he's going to ruin it. Like, he couldn't wait to talk about this fucking episode. But yeah.
And then I decided, like, right after that, I decided to go, oh, wait, I got the Blu-ray remasters. So I went and I grabbed it and I put on Balance of Terror. Then went again and rewatched Quality of Mercy and was just like, holy shit, like, just how close they, even to the smooth walking of when Pike walks in. And then he stands right next to the captain's chair. And then he says, status, Spock. And he's like, Uhura will tell you. Then he does that pan across the bridge, was shot for shot of what Kirk did. I was like, oh my God, they did like, oh, I was like, wow, this is really, really cool. Another thing I really liked was the future maroon suit that's one of the Star Trek suits that I love. I've always loved that uniform. And seeing Pike in that uniform gave me an idea when he said, the war's still going on. That was like 25-year gap.
Yeah.
You know, so it's like,
it shouldn't still be going on. That's the point.
Yeah. It's like, going, that's been 25 years and that's still going on. So I really liked seeing him in that uniform, seeing that. So it really kind of visualized it. Oh, this is how far in the future it's gone. I like that the Klingons would ended it with a bat lift. I really liked just the dynamic everybody kind of played, filling in the roles that would have been filled in by Kirk's crew. I really did kind of enjoy that.
I thought it was so dumb. I saw some people online like, but if it's 7 years from now, that's not Scotty, or they said Sulu should be there. And it's like, guys, the captain picks the crew.
Right, exactly.
Like, Kirk's not the captain of this ship. I wouldn't be surprised if you saw some of the Enterprise people on the Farragut.
Yeah.
Keep it real. But expertly done.
Yeah, I thought it was great. I was telling Adam, I saw some guy on YouTube who was sitting there going, yeah, you know, this is an okay show. It's all right. I just really wish we would have seen Pike do some more captain-y things. And I'm like going, I know, that's what I was like. I was like going, what the fuck does that even mean? Like, you think the ship...
Steve won't stand for people bad-mouthing Pike.
No.
That's number one.
If it makes sense, and this, like, doing captain-y shit, like, and there was one thing that this is the problem with society now, and I told this to Adam. In the original Star Trek episode, the guy that plays the Romulan commander is played by Mark Glenard, who eventually plays Spock's father, Sarek,
right,
in the series. Now, of course,
but just to be clear for anyone who doesn't know, it's not the character, just the actor played a different character,
right?
Which is very Star Trek, anyway.
Yeah, which is actually very science fiction. How many? Look at TNG and how many actors played certain.
Absolutely,
you know. But to take it one step further. Mark Lennart's character, and then his commandant or whatever, that his friend who ends up dying on the ship, and then the other guy that steps up that kind of tells him, you know, like what we should be doing and stuff like that. That actor plays Ston, the guy who wants to Paul or to Pring in A Mock Time later on. He's the same actor. So this idiot goes, yeah, you know, the guy that plays the commander in this one in Balance of Terror plays Spock's father. It would be cool if they got the actor that plays Spock's father in this one to play the Romulan commander. After they showed, he goes, yeah, that's pretty cool. He goes, I'm disappointed though that they didn't do that. And I'm like, one, why? I get, like, it would be like a little nuanced thing, but at the same time, it's like they have enough actors now that they can kind of pull from and wouldn't confuse people doing that. It's like, dude.
I agreed when you first told me this. It would have been cool, but I don't care.
You know, but that's the thing. Is like,
it would have been something I noticed and I would have went, oh, okay, I see what they did there. That's kind of, you know, getting real into the details and shit. Right. It would have been another callback to old Star Trek that would have been cool. Does it ruin the show for me? No, I don't fucking, it, whatever, you know.
Right.
The actor who played him was very good, actually. Reminded me of the original a lot.
I like the little, they brought back the little bump on the head.
Yeah. The
I saw that. I was like, oh, they brought that back. And they're like, yeah, they did use that before because they didn't have fucking, they used the helmet so they didn't have to do the makeup stuff. Though they said because they didn't, the ears, they didn't have to produce ears for everybody.
Yeah.
This was the one time, and you guys have heard me mention Trek culture on YouTube. They go almost out of their way to nitpick at shit. They gave this episode a perfect 9. I think either 9 or 10 out of 0. Like
Trek culture. Like I actually like Trek culture.
I do too. But sometimes they get a little too.
They like to play. Here's the problem. Okay. Here's the real issue. Trek culture is a British channel. Okay. You mix British cynicism with wanting to play the devil's advocate, you're gonna get some bad takes. Like, it's just the way it is. Like they like to try. They're the type that they want to find something, a flaw in it. They don't want to say something's perfect, which I respect that. It's fine. I love their top 10 lists and shit. Like I watch all those because it reminds me of old Star Trek stuff. You can tell that Trek culture is huge Star Trek fans. They just get super nitpicky about stuff.
It turns into the, well, actually, you know, that kind of thing from time to time. Yeah. But they actually gave this episode of like a solid, perfect episode, which I was kind of like, whoa, all right.
Great.
But yeah, I really thought if you haven't watched that yet, or if you're waiting for the whole series to be out before you binge it, definitely before you get to the final one, watch Balance of Terror if you haven't watched it in a while, because there are so many little nuances to it that actually makes you appreciate it more.
Also, fuck all that. Just watch Balance of Terror. Because it's Balance of fucking Terror.
True.
It's such a classic Star Trek episode. Like, it's so good. Submarine episode, check. Kirk on top of his game, check. You even dig the bad guy.
Yeah.
There really is no bad guy, if you think about it.
I think this is the first time we heard Prefect since... Because I think Prefect... Yeah. Wasn't Prefect like TNG era? Because they never... I don't think we ever remember hearing Prefect.
You're Centurion, too.
Yeah.
They're Romans. They're, right. Everything about they're blatantly Romans.
one thing I did think about that kind of also fixed something that goes in TOS. That little moment between Spock and Pike when Spock puts together that the future, if he changes it, it's gonna somehow hurt Spock.
Yeah,
you know. I thought was really cool because, and then he says, obviously, I thank you for that, which sets up why Spock does what he does in the menagerie, the way that he goes out of his way to take Pike back to that planet. It sets up that he did this for me. He sacrificed himself so I can live. I should do this. I need to do this.
Well, even like, and we know that Spock doesn't run on purely logic as much as he'd like everyone to think so, but yeah. It is also the logical thing to do too, because if he's so important that someone's going to sacrifice their life, that he needs to respect that. Cause it's like, I don't know. It would be crazy being someone and then knowing that you're that fucking important.
Yeah.
Like, I'd be nervous, bro. I'd be like, what the fuck am I supposed to do? Like, I don't even know I'm going to have a breakfast tomorrow.
Well, I looked at it. I looked at it and I go, well, yeah, I go, Spock is a big deal because he helps broker the Klingon and Federation truce and then reunites Vulcan with Romulans. So it's like, oh, yeah, he does have a really big impact. I like how Pike goes, you know, end of the universe type stuff.
Right.
So yeah, great episode. I thought it was a solid episode, and we get a bit of a cliffhanger at the end. When they ended it and he looked at the camera, I went, "Tut tut tut."
You know what I like too is we get a cliffhanger, but it had such a satisfying main story that I was like, oh, that will be cool to see next season.
Yeah,
I wasn't that upset. But I like, first of all, let's talk about G-Mo when they're carrying out number one. He just grabbed that hand.
Oh, I know,
like,
dude.
Dude was like, oh shit. It's like, you'll leave when he lets you.
Yeah, exactly. Okay? Exactly. A kind of meh episode. I mean, it wasn't meh. It just is an episode that, like in many of Trek, kind of didn't need to be there. Kind of doesn't even do anything for anything in the universe.
This episode's kind of interesting because Steve was kind of meh on it. I thought it had some funny moments, but it definitely had some moments where you're kind of like, all right, dude, come on. But I noticed this episode did spark a lot of conversation in the fandom.
Of course it did.
Both positive and negative.
And we're talking about Orville New Horizons twice in a lifetime.
Right. Sorry. I was noticing the Orville Reddit is one of the most positive places I've ever seen on Reddit. Like, these people just love the Orville. But a lot of people said the same things that we said, where there's some story beats in that episode that are just like, really? Like, come on. But then a lot of them say, okay, you know, I kind of get what's happening. It's kind of a tragic story. And I kind of agreed with both sides. It's just really, what part of the story are you latching onto? You know, and is the positives of this episode compelling enough for you to ignore the negatives of the episode? For me, kind of. I had fun watching it. I thought the whole Isaac and the other chick thing was cool. That they were having kind of a, like, you know, playing off each other a little bit.
Yeah.
You can see that they were trying to build towards them getting over the whole friction they have.
What did we say? She's hot, but she's a stone cold bitch.
Yeah.
It's like, she's hot, but damn, she's a bitch. And
we also get more of why she's so cold to him, because the answer before that, well, a lot of people died and some of them are my friends. Okay. Okay. I get it. But now it's more personal. It's someone that she was in love with, you know, this and that and the other thing. So, you know, and also one thing that I appreciated with her, especially in this episode, yes, she does not like Isaac, but they toned it down a little bit.
Yeah.
She was still working with him. She wasn't arguing with him the whole fucking time. You know,
I liked how Isaac played Data in this, when he's trying to create it. Yeah. He tried to, you know, a conversation. What are your activities? Do you do all these, like, these things to just kind of be, you know, start a conversation with her.
I want to give credit to the actor too, because this episode did make me think of Data because of the way he was behaving. But if you notice, the actor's face never moves.
Yeah.
Data used to raise his eyebrow, whatever. That's because Data has a face.
Yeah.
Isaac doesn't have a face.
That's true.
So I thought that was a really nice touch from the actor, that it was very noticeable. Like, he just was like, his face doesn't move at all other than his mouth.
I like how she leans to Isaac and goes, make this believable. And then he's like, oh, I'm losing.
I thought that was so funny. That whole scene, like, reminded me of, like, if Terminator 2 was for, like, a PG audience. It's kind of the same kind of vibe. Right. But one thing about that scene, Isaac aside, they would not have let that girl leave with those fucking motorcycles. It would have been an issue.
Yeah, there would have been something there.
What was the biggest thing that pissed me off about this episode that I was just like, come on, dude. It wasn't even Gordon. I kind of felt bad for him.
I feel bad for him too.
He made a huge mistake. And at first I'm like, what a fucking idiot. Like, you're such a, but then you think about it, like, that's a long time, man.
10 years.
You know, like.
Well, my thing with that is that I get where Isaac was coming from. I think for me, the whole thing was, is like, the story was good. I liked the story. I thought it was well played. My biggest thing is that the story, basically, we spent an hour and nothing, it meant nothing in the end.
That's pretty common in Star Trek and the Orville. You know what I mean?
But the thing is that it was an isolated episode, but it just was kind of like, it gave Gordon this whole, like, big story and kind of like a thing, and then just kind of diluted it to nothing. I get why. I get why, because he wouldn't have been the same guy coming back. It would have been resentment and all that stuff. I get that. But the same, but the, on that same token, it was like,
it was an easy way out.
It was an easy way out. It was just that, like, okay,
let's just reset everything.
Yeah, exactly. Let's just do a hard reset and just log in again.
But I will, I got to give credit to the actor who plays Gordon, because that speech at the end, that was powerful. Even if he was wrong, he was wrong.
Yeah.
But you just see a desperate man trying to protect, you know, his family and what's his. And he played that really well. Like, it was pretty, pretty emotional scene.
And also, too, the fact that this was the chick that he fell in love with. It was, I told...
Which was a little stalkerish, though. Let's keep it 100, dude.
Oh, yeah. But like I told Adam, I go, this was his Geordi episode. And and you know, for those of you that have watched TNG, it's the one where Geordi falls in love with the holodeck version of the what was she, the designer of the engines,
or? She designed the engine,
yeah, she designed the engine, and then like a season later, yeah, and then season later he meets her and she's totally different from,
yeah, she's colder,
yeah, and stuff.
So like, it was kind of, I felt bad for Geordi in that, because the computer did what he asked for,
right?
Because they gave her Von Braun's, but the computer made a version of Von Braun's that would work with him,
right,
to fix the problem. So she took away all of the negatives of her personality.
Yeah, exactly. And the thing is that with Gordon, you know, Gordon said, what was it? He was like 3 years up in the mountains and stuff like that.
Three years and then he gave up.
Yeah. But the thing is that, you know, he could have gone into a city. He could have gone into a city, kept to himself, get himself a little bit of a job, you know, maybe a faceless job at a, you know, at a company, and then just kind of like live a meaningless existence, you know, just goes, maybe not interact with too many people, but it's going to be hard, you know, to do that. And, but the thing is that what does he do? He ends up creating his own business and, you know, has a family, and it's just like,
he went full bore. Cause he, that was a private plane. Cause they asked if he had any clients.
Right.
You know, it's like, and it's so dangerous. Like, you're a pilot. What if you crash?
Yeah.
And you have someone important on there. Even living a, like you say, like a faceless life. No one's faceless. Like, we're all using each other's time in different ways. You could have someone who was supposed to die, but they stopped in that shop and had a conversation with them for a second and then didn't. You know what I mean? Yeah. So it's like, I get it from a temporal standpoint, but I also get his side of it too.
Yeah.
It's, and especially him, because he's super social and he's definitely an extrovert. So it's probably difficult for him to be alone.
And then also at the same time, it's like he believes he's stuck in the future. He's not going to live to see, you know, or he's stuck in the past. He's not going to live to see the future. But the fact that he went and he knew what happened to that chick and then yet goes and finds her. And then, you know, and then that whole thing of like, I kind of knew.
I was like, oh, that was just going to bring that shit up.
I was like, dude, bullshit.
There were two parts of this episode that I was like, no, that's a no. One was that where he finally tells the girl that he's from the future. And she goes, I already knew. No, you didn't. Even I'm super into science fiction, I wouldn't have known. No one is thinking, is this dude from the future in the 21st century? Right. Give me a fucking break. What was the other thing, too, that I was like, this is ridiculous?
What was it, like an IT crowd? Are you from the past?
I thought some people were from the past. God, I can't fucking remember. There was the second thing that I was just like, that's dumb. I can't remember for the life of me, but this is definitely a budget saving show too. They were just in regular fucking LA or wherever the fuck they were.
And those houses were nice. The one that he's living with, I'm like, geez, I guess.
The one thing, well, he's a pilot. The one thing, it didn't piss me off. I was kind of like, it's just a little too much convenience. Like, I understand that he's from the future. Woo. And there's a thing that people say, I forget what it's called, but there's this like theory of every three generations goes up like five IQ points. Mm-hmm. So someone from the 400 or 500 years in the future, like him, would be a genius today.
Oh, right.
Fine. We'll throw that in. He's not only became a citizen of the United States. He has a pilot license now.
Right.
We'll set that aside. He somehow made a subspace receiver that was not detectable by anyone on Earth that he precisely sent. I get he's an engineer, But Jesus, dude, like with the technology I have now, bro. I mean, I just installed a beta on my iPhone. I don't think you could do that. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. I was just like, that was a little, but that, I mean, Star Trek does it a lot too. And I'm not trying to compare it to Star Trek. I'm just talking about sci-fi, and this is a Star Trek podcast. It's sometimes there's convenient points that just move the story along. So that was just like, all right, you know, we get it. Mary Sue kind of shit going on, but he was the pollen down there, basically.
Right, right. You know? I took two twigs. I found a piece of barbed wire and
that's
kerosene.
That's a Vulcan MacGyver right there.
But the thing is too is that you think about that episode of Carbon Creek, where the Vulcans stayed there on the planet and they just had menial little jobs and then eventually disappeared. But
they also, the only difference thing with Carbon Creek is they weren't from the future. Mm-hmm. They weren't supposed to be there, and they were trying to stay out of the way. But there's definitely more dire consequences when you're fucking with a timeline,
right,
and not just some idiot who might see you. Because what show? I think it was Picard, where there was Vulcans on Earth and some kid. Oh, the guy they interviewed.
Yeah, the guy that interrogated Picard. Them.
Yeah. So, I enjoyed the episode for what it was. Was it an episode that I'm like, oh, I really want to see that again? Nah, not really. Yeah. It just says it's inconsequential.
Yeah, that's really the thing, because to me, and the reason I said this is because of the fact that most of the other episodes, excluding the first one, had some kind of impact. Or is going to have some impact, you know, as you know, whether setting up something or things like that. But, you know, here we've got an episode that didn't happen, you know, and I think,
yeah, it's more than just a singular episode that doesn't connect to the main storyline, because it's a timeline thing, and it was literally they erased the events of the show, yeah, so they could never call back to it.
Which was funny when they were like, you know, I'm not coming back there. You're going to have to drag me or whatever. And I was like, or just jump back, you know, 3 years and yeah, or 7 years and or ten, whatever was it, 10 years?
Which he figured out towards the end. They went back like 8 years or something.
Yeah.
There have been episodes of other shows that have done the same thing, where everything in the show was nothing. Like, it was all a dream or, you know, whatever.
Usually it's like in Star Trek, the parallel, the alternate future. Usually that's what we see is usually an alternate future.
But I also hope Gordon will get out a little bit more and stop dwelling on that damn cell phone that he found. Because that was the saddest part of the episode. That cell phone is not only still in his room, it's just on his desk. I'm like, bro.
I know. It's like, dude, it's like, no matter what, no matter what you do, she's not coming back because she's dead.
That was a really good episode of the first episode when he had the, what do they call their holodeck?
Yeah, I don't remember what it's called, but yeah.
Or whatever, but they had it like shape her life based off of her phone.
Yeah.
And it was a tragic kind of episode. That was, again, a Geordi episode. I think Gordon is Geordi.
I think Gordon is.
You know, so it's also, side note, the engineer and the Salian started making out. That was random.
That
too.
Was so, I mean, I get that they were leading up with the little bits, but like immediately going at it in engineering,
there
I was like,
people
the fuck?
In the room that were actively looking at them. So she comes in and obviously she's a Salian, so she's strong, and he has like a kink in his shoulder or whatever, and she's pushing it out and he's enjoying it a little too much. And, everyone looked up there like, what's going on?
Yeah.
And then they just start making out. And I'm like, are these people watching?
Somebody need to make a trip to HR. I think somebody's going to go to HR.
For real. But I mean, maybe we'll have a little love interest there.
Yeah.
You know, so that's kind of cool. I like all the characters, but I do like the new. I didn't like her at first. I'm going to be real, because I like the other security Salian that was there the first time.
Oh yeah, the cute one.
But yeah, but this one's cute too, but this one's grown on me. I like her. She's cool, you know.
Yeah.
I forget why that other chick left.
They didn't really say why she left, but I think she just opted to leave. I think it, because the way they made it sound is that they're willing to have her back, so I think it was just kind of her decision.
Yeah, she just had other stuff going on or something.
Yeah, I mean, she wanted to do other stuff, and I think the makeup thing, because she's like totally unrecognizable without the makeup.
Yeah.
First, she's a blonde, and like, you know, you see her without the makeup. I was like, oh shit, that's her.
Yeah. Then he tried to slide in them DMs. What the
Well, you know, I got to do what I got to do. You know, it's for science. I mean, it's for the show. I'm trying to do exactly. For the show. You know,
it's content, bro.
Yeah, exactly.
Speaking of content, it's getting late, and we need to get through this content. All right, this actually isn't a very long one. This is the you always want a three-parter. The second one is kind of it just connects the other two.
Yeah,
there's not much going on. Cold Station 12, ladies and gentlemen. This is episode 5 of season 4.
With every great discovery comes a threat of great destruction. UPN Friday. One man with the secret to life itself has created an unstoppable creed.
This only ends one way, Doctor. Prepare to be boarded. Thousands of pathogens sort you.
Which one will kill you first?
Brent Spiner returns in a continuing Star Trek event.
You son of a... Actually, Mother was a chemist.
Star Trek Enterprise.
First aired on November 5th, 2004. It is almost my 19th birthday. I wish. Soong's augments take control of a medical facility containing more augment embryos and several dangerous diseases.
Dun dun dun
dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun. Teaser. In 2144, Eric. I'm just gonna call him Eric. It's Eric with an A in the front. I'm not gonna say Eric. Fuck you. Eric Soong gives a lecture to his young children, remarking on how genetically engineered people like them have been feared by humans since the eugenic wars of the 20th century. Side note for good reason. young Malik asks if there are any others like them. Soong remarks that there are, and one day it will be their duty to free them. 11 years later, Dr. Soong and his grown augment children head to Cold Station 12 aboard a Klingon bird of prey to free other embryos following his escape from the custody of the Starship Enterprise. As they plan their mission to steal and the remaining embryos, Malik notices that they can take out the life support system easily. Soong dismisses it as it would kill the staff. He makes it clear no one is to be killed, even if they put up a fight. Malik accepts it for now. You know what's kind of interesting?
Go ahead.
I was just going to say the Soong family's two greatest claim to fames, which is augments and artificial life, both kind of had the same struggle.
Yeah.
Like, he just needs to stop making shit. Because they ain't liking it, bro.
I was gonna say when he was like going, "No one is to die," and I was like, "Okay, God."
That's pretty much what was going on. Like, fine, Dad.
Yeah, he was annoying. I thought he got better, but he still got even more annoying.
Yeah, the actor is fine. He's acting the part well, but the character is annoying. Like, that's the problem. The biggest problem with augments is how superior they feel they are.
Yeah.
Like in Star Trek, anytime it's someone who's like an augment or whatever, they're fucking asshole. Like every fucking time.
Well, it's also like how they get anytime you have a character, and Star Trek did this before too, they get a power and then they become, you know, they do the whole, yes, we know with great power also comes great ambition. And it's like, thought I was going to go the other way, didn't you? you know, they end up becoming super, overly ambitious and, you know, think they're better than everything else. And it's just kind of like, okay. But it's like, but half the time I get it, but a lot of times they always play too much with the scenery, if you catch my drift.
Yeah.
Tom.
I think that's also, that's what they're trying to portray as the flaw in these quote unquote perfect beings is they're not humble. Yeah. So they're not going to be helpful. They're going to view everyone around them as inferior and in the way, you know, so that's, well, remember, that's the rub.
Remember Riker as a Q.
Yeah, he was an asshole immediately. And Riker's a good dude. Act 1, Captain Starlog supplemental. Dr. Soong and his augments have escaped on a Klingon bird of prey. Without any other leads, we've proceeded to the coordinates Soong gave us when we began this mission. Enterprise arrives on the planet Trillius IV, the settlement where Soong raised his children. Upon entering the structure, Commander Tucker finds that some medical equipment from the settlement has been taken. Captain Jonathan Archer orders him to find out what exactly was removed. Meanwhile, Lieutenant Reed and a detachment of Makos search the settlement. They discover there is only one person, Udar. After he tries to escape with a knife in his hand, Captain Archer punches Udar, knocking him out. Always, bro. You ain't getting past Archer.
I thought he would have done more of the roundhouse kick, you know, from like Quantum Leap.
I wanted him to say just one "oh boy." It's campy, and I'm sure it would have been insulting, but just one.
That was a missed moment, I thought, in that episode.
Aboard the Bird of Prey, Soong is looking at a pad that was kept by Raiken. He remembers him as a bright young man, very interested in astronomy. He asks Malik where Raiken is, noting that none of the other augments is willing or able to provide any information.
It's because he murdered that motherfucker in cold blood.
I wanted Malik to be like, am I my brother's keeper? That's exactly the situation that was happening.
What happened to Malik? Who?
Who? Fuck that bitch. And Malik tells Soong that Raiken is dead. Malik admits to killing him in what he claims was self-defense in a confrontation in a court. A lion, bro.
Self-defense. Wasn't he held by three guys when he stabbed him? Like,
what? Yeah, and he cornered the fuck out, dude. He begins to get emotional, and Soong, enraged by this news, grabs Malik and pushes him against the wall. Malik tearfully apologizes to his father for the killing, and Soong forgives him, telling Malik that maybe if he had been there for his children, things would have been different. So, you know, father and son connecting. Captain Archer talks to Udar in sickbay. Udar, who had been left behind because of some reason, did not have the same physical or intellectual gifts as his siblings, refuses to tell the captain where his brothers and sisters are headed, only that Enterprise will not be able to stop them. Just then, Tucker contacts Archer and tells him that the medical equipment that was missing from the settlement were incubators, artificial wombs. Archer then receives new orders from Starfleet. He learns that there are over 1,800 other embryos kept at Cold Station 12. And since Soong is probably headed that way, Archer is given orders by Admiral Forrest to stop him using whatever force is necessary. You know what's funny is that two things. One, Soong is always tripping on Archer and, oh, they're misunderstood. Like he's never read a history book because the Eugenics Wars was a thing. Okay.
Well, see, he's a product of the new education system, which is there's two sides to every story. So the Holocaust, you have the story that everybody knows, and then you have the story the Nazis know. And that's the teaching that we have.
You'd think that was it. It was actually Common Core math. It just drove him crazy. You know, I fucking hate Common Core math. After formulating a plan to get embryos, the augments then hijack a Noblian medical ship, the Brazi, right?
Sure.
Also, it kind of dawned on me when I was watching the episode. What's his name? Noonien.
Soong?
The guy, Khan. Yeah, Khan.
Oh, yeah. Khan Noonien Soong.
He's floating in space right now in that fucking that probe thing. Sam. I like it. I like when I'm like, where are they now? I know exactly where that motherfucker is. Act motherfucking two. Archer arrives at sickbay to learn that Udar can be discharged. He informs Phlox that a colleague of his, Jeremy Lucas, is the station's senior medical director. Phlox then asks to be part of the boarding party. Archer accepts and then asks Udar to the captain's dining room to talk.
Have you ever seen a grown man naked?
What? Oh, nothing. There, Archer intends to get through to him. He says he should go to school when he gets back to Earth, though Udar was under the impression he would be jailed. When calling Soong his father, Archer then takes out a pad which has his biological parents' information on it. Confused, he picks up the pad to read it. Huh? Meanwhile,
father was on what's called a sex offenders list. I don't know what.
Don't read that part. It takes the
Wait. I thought I blacked that part out.
Hold on. Don't focus on that. Look at your mom. She's kind of hot. Meanwhile, the Augments easily infiltrate the station using the Denobian ship, and Persis takes out the two security officers without killing them, as Soong wished. Lucas, working in the lab, is informed that the station's communications is down. Then everyone in the room is knocked out by anesthesia gas. I think it's just anesthetic gas, right?
Anesthesia.
Say anesthesia gas.
Yeah, that's true, because anesthesia is, I don't know. See, the one problem that I have with this franchise.
Speak it.
Is there is never a general alarm that people hit if something's going wrong. Because you have these two dudes that single-handedly don't say like, hey, we got intruders in here. And this happens on Enterprise. This happens on TNG and all of that. The only one that I ever not really see this on is on TOS. On a lot of TOSs, they would be like, security, just whatever, you know. But it's always seems like, you know, you got one of the guards that gets, the way she punched that one dude later on. Yeah. You know, and like you see these guys going in there. One of the security guys can't hit a wall button that just sets off an alarm to let everybody know that something's going wrong at least. But it's just like I see this every time in Trek and it bugs the fuck out of me.
Yeah, especially since in real life, any important facility has an alarm. My house has an alarm, like if for CO2 and smoke.
Well, like, even in assembly, you hear somebody go, "Gun!" You know, somebody says something. You know, like,
yeah.
I mean, unless you're those idiots that like see somebody getting beat up in the street, and all you do is, "Oh, I could use my phone to call 911 or call the cops, but I'm going to use it to film it, and I'll be internet famous." It's like,
that's right.
There was this one video that I saw today on Twitter. And it's a video of this cat trying to get out of water. It's like a boat, near a boat or something like that. And this little dog comes over and tries to get it and then jumps in the water, gets the cat out, and then kind of struggles in there. And then I go, I get that this video is supposed to be kind of like, awe, you know, look what this dog does for this cat. But maybe the fucking person holding the phone could have actually went in the water and grabbed both of them out. You know, like, seriously.
How the fuck is he going to make a TikTok if he's fucking saving somebody?
I know, right?
You know what I mean? No, that's how I see that in that. You could say a lot of shit about, oh, you just see that on Twitter. No, I see that in real life. Like, I'll see that. I saw a car accident one time. I was driving by. Now, I knew that there was a cop right behind me. So I didn't stop. Like, I was like, well, the cop's going to stop. So I kept going. But as soon as these two cars smacked into each other, everyone around just pulled their phone out and started recording it. I'm like, what the fuck is wrong with these people?
Right.
You know, because they didn't know the cop was coming. So I'm in the clear. But it was just like, what the fuck? Yeah, people are just more. Well, I think it's also a little weird that you feel the need to record everything. Like, why don't you just experience life? Yeah. You know, but whatever. Maybe I'm just getting old. Archer finds Phlox in the mess hall trying to gain a bit of weight, but he's not hungry, dwelling on the fate of his friend Lucas. Isn't the Lucas character the one that he keeps writing?
Yeah, he's the one that keeps writing in those videos.
His pen pal.
Some of his best episodes were letters to him.
Yeah, Dr. Lucas. Archer assured him they're getting there as fast as they can. He also relates his father struggled with Clark's disease, noting that perhaps Soong has a point, that genetic engineering doesn't have to be strictly illegal but can do some good. Phlox chalks it up to instinct being behind intellect. Archer notes Denobians never came close to destroying themselves, perhaps because they did not have that failing. Yeah, that was kind of a somber moment, to be honest. Denobulians are like perfect. Like, other than that fucking weird war atrocity episode, but as a people now, they're kind of honestly, Denobulians are Germans. So the Denobulians now are the Germans now. They're happy. They're well taken care of. They got their shit together. But in the past, they did some things that were a little questionable.
It would have been hilarious. It would have been hilarious if Archer would have went. I mean, aside from the whole you know genocide thing you guys had going on there, you guys have managed to skirt everything else.
Yeah, it's amazing, you know. You know, you really didn't have any genetic failings other than trying to murder an entire race of
exactly.
people.
Exactly. Instead of, you know, the whole, like, you know, Holocaust thing, you know, that you guys had going on over there. You know, you guys are pretty perfect.
Yeah, great. He just walks out the room but keep an eye contact.
I know, it doesn't turn his back on him.
Yeah, I wouldn't either. upon breaking into Cold Station 12, things get a little uglier. Then Lucas says, sorry, I said the wrong word, says he didn't have access to the embryo chamber as he did earlier. Malik thinks he's lying, but Soong believes him and has the whole team locked up in a separate room. Then gets to work on cracking the axis himself. Just then, they detect the Enterprise arriving. Soong hails Archer and forces him to turn around. And despite Archer believing Soong isn't a killer, when he threatens to kill Lucas, Archer turns the ship around. Okay. The sentence was a little weird. Act 3. Lokish reveals there's another layer of encryption on the quantum level. Send Ant-Man in there. So he needs more time. Malik, however, obtains...
There's another level of encryption that can only be cut off by the FBI.
Tell me why there's a quantum level encryption on this one, but they're cracking codes with lockpicks in TNG.
I know. Like,
let me know, Mo. Let me make it make sense. Malik, however, obtains proof that Lucas was lying about being able to access the embryo chamber as Soong orders him out of the locked up room. Soong realizes that Lucas will not give up the code that unlocks. I just thought of a really inappropriate joke and I'm going to tell you when we're not recording.
Oh, that inappropriate. Okay.
Even at the expense of his people or his own life. Malik takes Soong aside and suggests shoving the station's deputy director into a tube and has him exposed to Cymbeline blood burn to give Lucas an incentive. This episode's very like, it's almost like they're rushing to the third episode.
Yeah, this seemed like the, well, we can do this. Then when they got there, they're kind of like, oh, wait, we don't really have a whole lot.
Right, we'll just do whatever. We're just going to wing it, guys.
And to be honest, I did jump ahead and see the third part of this. They weren't really.
You do that a lot lately.
I do because I don't like waiting all that much. And
Mr. Binge himself over here.
Yeah, and then I'll rewatch it before just to kind of freshen up. But to be honest, I don't know what they were rushing to be honest with you.
No.
Yeah.
Soong initially says it isn't necessary, but Malik convinces him. The deputy director dies a horrible death. How did he die again? I forget.
He put that he didn't give him the anti serum. Oh, yeah. He just let
him. Kind of fucked up,
bro. I know. Fucking that.
At least shoot him in the head or something. Let him go fucking without pain.
Yeah, but that
some dignity.
Yeah, but what's his name was just like, no, let's do this. Let's, like, he was getting a little too excited about,
you know what it kind of, you know, we talk about how they feel superior. It kind of feels like you're giving a child a gun.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? They lack the wisdom, because wisdom can't be genetically put into your genome. You know what I mean? Right. So it's like you're giving them a loaded pistol and going, okay, figure it out. And then walking away. It's just,
it's like when you hear people like going, well, you know, the reason we have these mass shooters is because we teach kids to respect guns. It's like, no, you teach them how to shoot it, how to become a better sharpshooter. You don't treat them like You don't teach them like, now look, you can kill somebody with this and you can kill a lot of people with this, but don't. It's bad. You know, it's like.
It's that simple.
Yeah.
Don't. It's bad.
Yeah. You know, it's like, yeah, but if you give a kid, particularly a teenager, you know, or even a late teen, somebody is just 18, they still have a lot of impulse drive. And that they know, like, I can kill a lot of people with this. They're going to kill a lot of people with it. It just doesn't make any sense. So you give somebody like this guy who is basically what is this dude's name again? The leader of
Malik.
Yeah. Malik is, and I'm going to use an analogy that people are going to be pissed off. Sung is Fox News, and he has disseminated all this information about how evil Earth is and how evil Earth treats them and that they don't respect them. So what does Malik do? Malik has absorbed all that information and has like going, oh, I've learned all of this. So ergo, I'm going to have to get rid of the humans in order for me to live because they're afraid of me. That's really what it is. He's basically the product of Sung.
Simply put, it's Sung has the wisdom, and the knowledge, but he gave the knowledge to someone who lacks wisdom.
Right.
And that's dangerous because just having a bunch of knowledge on something and you don't know how to apply it,
right,
isn't very helpful. That's why it's a, you know, life's kind of a slow burn, man. You're not supposed to have it all up front. Sung realizes that Lucas will not give up the code that unlocks the Ember Chamber. Did I say that already? I did. Yeah, so the dude died while everyone just kind of stood around watching. It was kind of shitty.
Yeah.
The Enterprise, however, is able to transport a team to the station. Of course they are. Before backing off and moving out of transporter range. By matching the that's why he dipped, by the way, because he got the sneak team in there.
Yeah.
By matching the frequency of the transporter to the station's containment field, because of course, Archer leads a team of Reed, Makos, Phlox, and Uldar. It's quite the motley crew, to be honest. They take out one of them, but it takes a few hits with a phaser pistol to stun them, bringing the question of what it takes to kill them. Phlox then directs the team to a point where life support can be accessed and starts working on controlling it. Sung was almost desperate at Lucas for his continued lack of cooperation, clearly uncomfortable with the use of torture to achieve his goals. He pleads with him, and when Lucas tells him to go to hell, he sees there's no point and decides to release the antipathogen, which sounds very DC Comics, by the way. It's like the anti-life equation. Malik, however, openly defies him and refuses, continuing to raise tension between himself and Sung. Sung pushes him away and realizes it himself, but it's too late. During this, Lokish detects the anomaly caused by Archer's team, and one of them goes to check it out. Uldar says he actually has good hearing and hears them coming. Well, good for Uldar, man.
Yeah.
But actually, the Mako lookouts were already captured. Poor Uldar, bro. He's the fucking ugly duckling.
I didn't really get any powers, but I got the power of a cat. So, so if you open it, if you can open a tuna can from across the room, I'll hear it. Because my
cat, I want to give a shout out to my cat Binks. I saw him in the bathroom when I went in there to take a leak. I'm like, what's he doing? And he's staring in a corner behind the toilet. I'm like, I know there's a bug back there. And I just took a leak. He doesn't care about me. And then he like lunged at the corner and then kind of paused. I'm like, you get him, buddy. I'll leave the light on for you. I love that fucking cat. I don't have to deal with it. I have to spray outside. We're getting too many bugs in the house. It's those random bugs. Like, it's not the you're dirty bugs. It's just like outside bugs are coming in.
That's where the cat's like, go, yeah, don't fuck with me, motherfucker.
But typical cats, though, I've seen them like chase crickets and then they lose it because they're too busy fucking with it. Mm-hmm. It's like, just eat the fucking thing.
Yeah, here, my cats pretty much fuck with them. River's the one that kills them.
Nice. My dog just doesn't do shit. My dog literally doesn't pull its own weight at all. It doesn't do anything.
You can't do the basic shit, then you got to get a job.
Can't even do basic dog shit. Like, it's like, what the fuck, dude? By this time. I love my dog, by the way. Just, you know. The Enterprise has figured out the team has been captured, and they reapproach the station and hail it. Suing answers, and Archer quickly yells for T'Pol to execute her orders. Execute order, what is it? Execute 66. Order 66. Or,
yeah.
She cuts the communication and has Hoshi activate the station's auto-destruct sequence. Act 4.
Activate the auto-destruct sequence.
Da, da, da. Hoshi finds that her transmission was sent back to her amplified enough to overload the comm. T'Pol turns to the weapons.
Surprised it didn't overload an EPS conduit.
For real. Do they even use EPS conduits yet?
Yeah, because isn't it the one Trip's always repairing?
Maybe. There's something they don't. Oh, I see linear chips. They don't use those yet. Their original Enterprise didn't use those either. Well, I guess this is the original Enterprise. TOS Enterprise didn't use it either.
Get your shit correct, man.
Sorry. Well, the original Enterprise is floating in the ocean somewhere. I mean, how far back are we going
to
go?
Yeah, I stopped listening. I stopped listening to this podcast because the guy called the TOS Enterprise the original Enterprise.
We find the mercantile ship from England. I don't know how far back we're going. Was it a mercantile? See, now I'm gonna have to look shit up.
Then somebody replies to him and go, well, actually, he's referring to Star Trek. So technically, the original Enterprise would be TOS, but canonically, Star Trek Enterprise is the first Enterprise ship.
Don't even fucking clown like that, because that's why I got stuck. Because I said the original Enterprise, and I went, well, wait a minute.
I know. That's why.
The Constitution class Enterprise is what I'm referring to. Thank you. I'm such a nerd. T'Pol turns to the weapons to destroy the station, but on approach, the Klingon ship comes from behind and attacks.
Yeah, it does.
sir. It fires on them and moves away, trying to draw them away from the station. T'Pol tries to push on. And refresh my memory, because it kind of looked this way. The Klingon ships greatly outmatch the Enterprise.
Oh, yeah.
At this point.
At this point, yeah. I mean, they modified some of the shielding after their last encounter with the Zindi, but I think
it's still the Enterprise.
Yeah, the Klingon ship is still going to outgun the Enterprise.
The biggest upgrade the Enterprise has is they have forward and aft torpedo bits. That's the biggest.
And
they don't have to always turn to shoot them.
And whatever shit Archer snagged from the Columbia when he was over there.
He took that chair, bro.
Yeah.
I guarantee it. Realizing the friendship between him, and they pulled it down. Archer grabbed that bitch when he was on the door. Keep it real. Realizing the friendship between Dr. Phlox and Lucas, Malik decides to take things into his own hands, as he openly defies his father and proceeds to expose the Denoblian doctor to a pathogen. Understanding now that the augments are not bluffing, Lucas reveals the code, and the augments are finally able to steal the embryos and get away. Soong wants old Udar to come with them, but he prefers to stay. Soong wishes him well and leaves to get the embryos. After he's gone, Malik decides to take some of the pathogens for himself as quote-unquote insurance.
He could have just got Geico.
I know. Fuck Geico, by the way. You already know. As Saul puts Archer into the locked room with his team and the station staff, Archer knocks him down with the door, because Archer's a G, dude. Like, Archer's literally beating the shit out of everybody in the galaxy.
Right.
If they get in his way. Malik is right there to fight him and now has a reason to kill him.
My thing though is that if the augments are superior strength and stuff like that, would Archer's hits have any impact on them?
Yeah, because it's Archer.
Oh yeah, that's true.
Come on.
If it was Malcolm, like, they would have just looked at him like, seriously? Like, you hit like a girl.
Trip would have died.
After one punch that he launched at the augment, Trip would have died.
You know why? Because Archer got the fucking hands, bro. It don't matter. If you hit someone in the right spot, I'm actually bouncing right now, shadow boxing. Pop, pop, pop.
You know, when Archer fights in his head, he's going, da, 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 da.
No, you know what? The number one track I always think of when someone's like training for a fight, most people think of like the Rocky theme or whatever. Right. I always think of the theme from Mike Tyson's Punch Out when you got the password. So you would get the password and the coach was on the bike and little Mike was fucking running behind him and it was all ding, 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 ding. You know, I don't know who was in the fucking studio, but that shit hit, dude. He fights him hand to hand for a while, but then decides he doesn't have time. And what is true? What you're saying is true, because when they in the episode before this, when they got on the Klingon ship, they took them Klingons out like they was nothing.
Yeah, that was like Superman level kind of shit. Like they were hitting them and they send them all the way down the hall.
What though? You know what they say, Archer changed when he got back from the.
That's true. That's true.
Expanse, bro. He ain't never been the same. I didn't fucking with him, bro.
Think fucking Daniels goes, I'm going to send you back to your time. I'm going to give you a couple upgrades.
Yeah.
Archer sticks his hand out to Phlox and goes, come with me if you want to live.
Nice. He fights him hand to hand for a while, but then decides he doesn't have time and instead shows sadistic tendencies and little regard for his father's wishes. Bro, this dude's crazy.
But the thing is Archer was kind of giving him some struggles. So he's like, you know what? I ain't got time for this shit.
Yeah, that's right. You know what's funny? If I was Archer, I'd be like, yeah, I bet you don't, bitch ass motherfucker. You didn't know I had hands.
I did like what Archer said to him when he's like, when he goes, you know, I almost wish I could see what the pathogen gets you. And then Archer's like, well, you could stay and find out.
Yeah.
I laughed.
Like, I'm telling you, he ain't to eat the same as to keep. I used to kick it with him, but he got a look in his eyes now. I don't know, bro. He sets the containment breach that will release all the pathogens stored on the station, killing everyone there. He doesn't want Udar to die that way, so he kills him and said, dude's cold, bro.
Dude, that was like unnecessary.
It was unnecessary. Like, the thing is in the beginning, it's kind of the one smart thing about these two episodes, and probably the third one, I guess, is that originally in the first episode, you think he's the better pick because the other guy, we don't actually know a lot about the other guy that he killed, but that he's just kind of, you know, he smacked him like a bitch one time on the bridge and shit. So you're like, oh, he's probably an asshole, whatever. But you're coming to find out that no, he was the better choice. This guy's a dick. The Enterprise sees the shuttle leave towards the Klingon bird of prey, but it is too slow to disable the Brizai. It is able to dock with the bird of prey extremely quickly, and it immediately docks to warp. You know what I noticed? Have we ever seen a Klingon shuttle?
No, but this was the Denobulian one, remember?
No, I know that. I'm just thinking out loud. Like,
no, I don't think the Klingons had a shuttle.
But most Klingon ships can land.
Yeah, because the wings, especially the bird of prey, is because their wings tilted up and the landing gear came out.
I just realized that we've never seen. I mean, I've even seen a Ferengi shuttle, for Christ's sake. But we've never seen.
Yeah, we did. Didn't the Ferengis had a shuttle when they were competing
for
that
warp
core?
I've seen.
Oh, okay.
I've seen a Ferengi shuttle before. It was what's his name? Oh my god. The main Ferengi, Quark? The one who owns the bar.
Quark?
Quark, thank you. I wanted to say Rom, and it wouldn't get out of the way. that he uses in that, where they go back in time,
But there was also that TNG shuttle. That TNG one when they were
the
going
TNG
for
the... TNG one as well. Yeah, that's true.
The wormhole?
The Enterprise sees the show. Oh, yeah, fuck you. After Lucas tells Archer how he can stop the breach, he then runs to the primary junction at Cold Station 12 where it can be averted, but he has less than 4 minutes left. To be continued.
Da, da, da. Da, 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 da.
Oh, by the way, memorable quote, the first one, and this did make me laugh. Like, I went, ha, ha. He said, you son of a bitch. Actually, mother was a chemist.
Yeah.
I died, bro. Like, literally... Soong, Brent Spiner in this was a stand-up comedian. And all, like, every, He's so he's such a ham when he's playing a Soong family member. It's fucking great, dude.
What do you say when Luke is told him something obviously that was derogatory, and he's like, "The language is unbecoming of a man of science."
Why are you flying a Denoblian shuttle? Why not? You aren't Denoblian. Very plainly said. Background information. At one point, blow my nose. At one point, it is said that there are a few hundred thousand possible combinations for the hexadecimal password. However, when Lucas finally reveals it, the screen shows that it is composed of 16 characters, meaning that there were, in fact, about 1.8 times 10 to the 19th power equals 16 to the 16th, or a long ass fucking 18. Thank you. About 18.4 quintillion possibilities. What math nerd was on here fucking around with the wiki? you see me hit that big number. Yeah. I said, wait a minute.
I was waiting to go like, oh, is he going to even try that? Is he going to try that one?
Wait a minute. Wait. Let me tell you. Have you seen that new TikTok trend where it's like someone's in trouble and the sound is like, let me tell you something. Let me tell you something. It's so funny. On the surface of Trillius 4, where Soong raised the augments, there was a large device composed of two long glowing red tubes. God, this device is so famous. I see it every time.
I know. Almost every science fiction movie always has that thing on there. Yeah.
This device has been seen in many places on TNG, DS9, and Voyager, including most interestingly in Dr. Noonien Soong's lab in TNG Data Lore. That's a great episode, by the way. It is also seen in the control room of Code Station 12, but with blue lights rather than red. So it's a completely different device then. It's Star Trek. the device was first seen in Star Trek II, The Wrath of Khan, on the space laboratory Regulia.
Regular one.
Regular one, sorry. I don't know what the fuck. I'm having a stroke.
Regular one. Gosh.
Regula Manuilia.
It's not a pasta dish. It's not a pasta dish.
Ragu. Aside from the Star Trek franchise, the device was also featured in Airplane 2, the sequel, where it was seen on the lunar base commanded by William Shatner's character, which was like the deepest callback, dude. Wasn't it?
It's funny because I remember this scene where he goes, give me a status. And the guy goes, well, we can't figure out these lights. They blink. They go back and forth. And he's like, why would they give us lights that just go back and forth?
Yeah, it was such a. I remember seeing that because I haven't seen Airplane 2, but I've seen that bit on YouTube, and I'm like, oh my god! Like, did people even realize back then? Like, I know nowadays we're constantly looking like for callbacks. We're all fucking what's his name pointing at the TV,
right?
You know, but that was such a deep cut, dude. I was like, holy shit! Udar's mother was stated to have been an Olympic decathlete. Implying that though not currently an Olympic athlete, a woman's decathlon will be added to the Olympics sometime prior to the eugenic wars. Yay, feminism. Of course it will be. When this episode was aired in the United Kingdom, broadcaster Channel 4 edited out some of the more violent scenes, including the part where Dr. Lucas gets tortured and the close-up of the scientists being killed by the virus. Pansy ass. Well,
these are also the same ones that cut the scene where that what's his name got his head blew up in a TNG episode.
Oh yeah, that's right. Yeah. Well, they say Americans are way more harsh on sexual content and way more chill about violence.
Yeah,
and honestly, I think we're doing that wrong.
Yeah, because European and English, they're more open with sex and more restrictive on violence.
Well, it just shows our origins.
Yeah.
The Quakers and stuff. The lethal diseases mentioned as being stored in Cold Station 12 in this episode are a reference to various fictional diseases which have been mentioned on previous Star Trek series, including xenopolyphathema, Achilles fever, Synthicosis novae type A, Rigelian fever. That's a classic. And Tellurian plague. It'd be funny if it's all monkeypox, COVID-19. What? They knew all along. This episode received an Emmy Award nomination for Outstanding Stunt Coordination by Vince Dedrick Jr. They've been getting a lot of fucking nominations and shit.
Well, yeah. I mean, that guy, when she punched that one dude and he literally did a 360 in the air, I was like, I saw that. I went, oh, shit. I literally jumped.
You know what was the best about it? It looked legit.
Yeah,
like,
it did.
Like it really happened.
Yeah, it looked like she really hit. I was like, oh my God.
I'll read it anyway because it's the last one. Several props and costumes from this episode were sold off on the It's a Wrap sale and auction on eBay, including Richard Riley's, I think that's just a funny way of spelling my last name, lab coat and Dr. Soong's lesson pad. Man, I would love a pad, bro. I would love if I could get a case for my iPad that looked like a pad.
Oh, yeah.
That's funny. So fucking that's, cool.
It's funny. It was like, it's a wrap sale auctioned off on eBay, including Richard Riley. Like,
what?
he had nothing going right now. He was like, they would have had an auction him off.
The next episode is obviously the final in this trilogy called The Augments. It is also directed by LeVar Burton, which is cool. We love Jordy. This one was directed by Mike Vayar, whoever the fuck that is.
Jesus.
He ain't fucking Jordy, I'll tell you that much right now. He did direct TNG's Coming of Age, which was a Wesley Crusher story. I'm just going down the Memory Alpha rabbit hole. Yo, you could get stuck on Memory Alpha for hours.
Oh, yeah.
I've done it. I'm currently doing it. No. So I thought it was an all right. I mean, the whole Augments thing is cool because of how it's calling back. But this is – it's kind of very like fisticuffs kind of shit going on.
Yeah.
So it's not too deep thought. So far, you know,
yeah.
Which is fine. I mean, a little bit of action is cool, but we just came off of a bunch of action too. I'm looking forward to seeing an episode that's a little bit more cerebral, but we'll see.
Yeah, you know, I mean,
either way, I enjoyed it.
But. Yeah, for me in this episode, it was like I was kind of like meh. So I thought, well, this is the middle chapter. Maybe we'll see something else when we get to the next episode, maybe the big finale. And even when I watched the big finale, I was kind of like, oh, that's it. It's a little disappointing, but you know. Oh, also keeping up, this is episode 97. So three away from 100. So
it's been a long road.
Yeah.
It's never not funny.
All right, head out to warp 5, 6, 7, 8.
Oh shit. You know, I just want to say that Star Trek is the shit. Even some of Star Trek's worst episodes are better than all of reality TV combined.
Oh god, yeah.
So stop watching reality TV and start Star Trek. That's what I'm trying to say. Although I don't think anyone listening to this podcast would disagree with watching more Star Trek, but thanks for tuning in. You've ditched the ads and would like to stay independent. We can only do that with your support. If you would like to donate to make this podcast and all the shows on the Lazy Geeks Network self-sustaining, you can go to thelazygeeks.com and click on the donate button.
And if you can't help us out monetarily, we get it. But you can also share the show with your buddies and rate the show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you can. This will give us bigger exposure. All of this helps. Trust me. Just let it happen.
Stop. You can check out our flagship podcast, The Lazy Geeks, where we discuss being a geek in an adulting world, available where you found this one.
And if you want to be a part of the show, hit us up on the comments, questions, or if you have ideas for future episodes, you can go ahead and catch us up on the social media, the Facebook, the Twitter, and the Instagram, all under at The Lazy Geeks, or email us, themailbag@thelazygeeks.com. So that is it for us this week. So until next time, I'm Stephen Vargas.
I'm Adam Riley.
Two to beam up.